catalogue a little while, sort of connecting in various different things. And I just wanted to ask her a few questions about the Haven project, Claire, which is what I sort of connect you with, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is an initiative, from as far as I'm aware anyway, about bringing mental well-being to youngsters in secondary school. So
that's right.
How did that start?
So I work for a charity, a local charity called the 267 Project. Some of you may have come across us. And our role is to support churches in youth work and children's work. A few years back, it just became aware that there were more and more young people that we were working with that were really struggling in the area of mental health, and especially around anxiety. Now, anxiety is natural. It's a normal part of life. It's entirely kind of an everyday occurrence for lots of people to feel a bit anxious from time to time. But these were young people whose lives were being severely impacted by the feelings of anxiety. So couldn't get to school, or if they were in school, they couldn't stay in classes. So I started some local support groups for teenagers who are facing these kind of challenges. One was in Harpenden in partnership with High Street Methodist, and another in St Albans. And that was great, we carried on for a bit. But how do you persuade anxious teenagers to come to a new place with new people to try a new thing? That is a big, big challenge. About a couple of years back, I got together with our friends at STEP. Some of you will know STEP, the Christian Education Project, headed by Chris Birch Evans. And we've developed a 6-week course that we take into secondary schools, that we run in specific year groups, so that young people kind of journey with us, and we provide them proven, practical strategies and tools to help them reduce their anxiety levels. It's going pretty well at the moment.
Good. And that happens in a number of different schools?
Yes, we're in about 10 different schools in the area, and one school in Leicestershire, randomly. But there we go.
Fantastic. Great. So having discovered that, I thought Claire would be a great person to come and talk to us about our own mental well-being, which has come up on the agenda generally, hasn't it?
I think
over the last couple of years particularly. So thank you so much for agreeing to be with us.
You're welcome.
The space is
Brilliant.
All yours, Claire.
Thank you. So... I'm sure, like myself, a lot of you tuned in to the Olympics, and I watched in awe as these athletes gave it their all. It's just a remarkable feat, isn't it, some of them? But even the fittest athletes, their physical health can be good to bad. Even the fittest person, if you have a cold, you can be brought down low, or you might break a bone or sprain something. There are ups and downs of physical health. And it's the same with our mental health. Even those of us with the sunniest of characters, the smiliest of dispositions, will feel from time to time sad, lonely, down. That is the natural way. We all have mental health ups and downs. But actually, I guess in the last few years, we have become more and more aware of just how complex that is as an issue, and just how many people it affects. And of course, especially following the pressures of the pandemic, it is perhaps good for us to renew our thinking on how we can care for ourselves. And it's worth acknowledging, perhaps, that as Christians, we may have all sorts of weapons in our pocket, defences that we can call upon, but our faith is not a total vaccine against mental pressure and the downs of life. And we're going to have a Bible reading now. Tristan's going to bring us the Bible reading for today. That gives us a very good example of how one of the heroes of the faith actually really struggled in this way.
Ahab told Jezebel everything Elijah had done and how he had killed all the prophets with the sword. So Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah to say, "May the gods deal with me, be it ever so severely, if by this time tomorrow I do not make your life like that of one of them." Elijah was afraid and ran for his life. When he came to Beersheba in Judah, he left his servant there, while he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness. He came to a broom bush, sat down under it, and prayed that he might die. "I've had enough, Lord," he said. "Take my life. I am no better than my ancestors." Then he lay down under a bush and fell asleep. All at once, an angel touched him and said, "Get up and eat." He looked around, and there by his head was some bread baked over hot coals and a jar of water. He ate and drank and then lay down again. The angel of the Lord came back a second time and touched him and said, "Get up and eat, for the journey is too much for you." So he got up and ate and drank. Strengthened by that food, he travelled 40 days and 40 nights until he reached Horeb, the mountain of God. There he went into a cave and spent the night. And the word of the Lord came to him. "What are you doing here, Elijah?" He replied, "I've been very zealous for the Lord God Almighty. The Israelites have rejected your covenant, torn down your altars, and put your prophets to death with the sword. I'm the only one left now, and now they're trying to kill me too." The Lord said, "Go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by." Then a great and powerful wind tore the mountains apart and shattered the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. After the earthquake came a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire came a gentle whisper. When Elijah heard it, he pulled his cloak over his face and went out and stood at the mouth of the cave. Then a voice said to him, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" He replied, "I've been very zealous for the Lord God Almighty. The Israelites have rejected your covenant, torn down your altars, and put your prophets to death with the sword. I'm the only one left now, and now they are trying to kill me too." The Lord said to him, "Go back the way you came and go to the desert of Damascus. When you get there, anoint Hazael, king over Aram. Also anoint Jehu, son of Nimshi, king over Israel, and anoint Elisha, son of Shaphat from Abel-Meholah, to succeed you as prophet. Jehu will put to death any who escape the sword of Hazael, and Elisha will put to death any who escape the sword of Jehu. Yet I reserve 7,000 in Israel, all whose knees have not bowed down to Baal and whose mouths have not kissed him."
Well done.
Thank you, Tristan. So, the story of Elijah illustrates a really important lesson for us all. When our actions and outward behaviour get a bit out of control, then it's good for us to notice what's happening on the inside. So when the outside sends us the danger signals, it's good to look to the inside, our emotional and mental well-being, and see what needs to happen. Because something with Elijah was very, very wrong. He said Elijah was afraid and he ran for his life. He is experiencing extreme mental trauma. So much so that at one point he even prays that he might die. Now, I think I'd like to press a little bit of the pause button for a second and just reflect that that is an extremely desperate place to be in. He has, you know, in one of the songs we sang earlier, we said, "Have you come to the end of yourself?" Well, that is the extreme, isn't it? He's come to the end of his own resources. He doesn't know how he can keep going. And he prays that God, to God, that he might die. And I just want to say that even the strongest of us can get to that point. And if that resonates with you, if in the privacy of your own head, things get to the stage where you think, enough, I cannot take it anymore, I would urge you, please, to talk to somebody. Because in our heads, in the privacy of our heads, thoughts like that can take hold and have power. But when we bring them into the light and are brave enough to share them with someone else, they lose a lot of that power. And you can get help. And if you cannot face talking to somebody who's your friend, your family, your church family, then there are organisations such as Samaritans who are there 24/7. And if you are worried about somebody and you think that they actually might be that desperate, don't ever be afraid to ask. There is a kind of a fear that if by asking the question we put thoughts in people's heads. It's not true. We can only help by showing care and concern. And the Ollie Foundation are a local charity who have fantastic resources to help if you think you've got a friend or you want to support somebody in that situation. So, back to Elijah. We are going to use an acronym today, HALT, H-A-L-T, to help us see that what is happening on the outside with Elijah can help us look to the inside and ask ourselves some important questions for self-care. So I wonder if anybody might be able to guess what our first word is, beginning with H. What might we look for in terms of self-care, our mental and emotional well-being? Any ideas? Yeah. Tristan? Sorry?
Health.
Health, very good one. What if I showed you that? Hungry. Okay. So our first H is for hungry. So, hold on, 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm going to give Mark the H. There we go. So I wonder what you are like when you get hungry. Now, I've brought Sam with me today. Now, Sam, when he was younger, not so much now, just like to say, but when Sam was hungry when he was little, he was like a stubborn donkey. So he would not move. He would not be moved from whatever it was that he wanted or did not want to do. Myself, I am more of a prickly, grumpy hedgehog. I am spiky when I am hungry. So I want you to turn to the people you're with. What are you like? Think of an animal whose characteristics are like you when you're hungry. Go. Okay, let's have a few. Just call out your animals. What have you got? What are some of the animals that we've got? A wasp. Oh, that's good. Beware the sting. Any others?
A Labrador.
Oh, that is brilliant. Just constantly needing food. Excellent. Gana?
A squirrel.
Oh, constantly looking for nuts. And maybe hiding a few things? Okay. So, Elijah was clearly hungry. He'd been many days without food. And this was a practical reason for his distress. And when we feel in a turmoil, when we feel emotionally confused, it's good to check in if our physical needs are being met. And actually, H could be for hungry or hydrated. I talk to a lot of my teenagers and say one of the best things you can do to stop your anxiety from becoming overwhelming is just to keep drinking. So isn't it reassuring that the great Jehovah Jireh, the God who provides, has an eye on those practical needs? And that's where he meets Elijah first. That's the first thing the angel does, is meet those practical needs. So I wonder what A might stand for.
Angry.
Angry. Very good. We've got our angry face.
So, actually, of course, hunger and anger could very well be connected. We know that a lot of hangry people around, when they're hungry, they get angry.
Now, Elijah might not at first glance appear to be angry. He's desperate, he's sad, he's lonely, but is he angry? But look at what he says. He says, "Take my life, for I am no better than my ancestors." Well, who said you were, Elijah? Who was comparing him? No one else was there comparing Elijah to his ancestors. It was him. He was pointing the finger at himself. And actually, that sort of self-anger, self-labelling can be the most sticky or destructive form of anger around. So I wonder when you last got properly angry. I wonder what it is that pushes your buttons. So to push your buttons means the thing that somebody does intentionally to kind of wind you up. So are you brave enough to share that amongst yourselves? What are the sort of things that push your buttons and bring up the instant anger response? Hey, I won't ask you to share with the group on that one.
I think that one is one that you can just keep in your small groups.
But you know, anger can often be a kind of self-protective mechanism. It arises sometimes when we are frightened of potential pain or shame. So anger sometimes is actually a secondary emotion. Now, when my children were little, I didn't really know, because of the way I'd been raised, I didn't really know how to handle them being sad. When my children were sad, I was confused, I was distressed, and I didn't know how to fix it. And it would often look and feel as if I was angry, which is awful. I was, you know, it was doing the worst possible thing, that I was actually showing an anger rather than compassion. But once I kind of untangled the knots and was able to see what was underneath that emotional reaction, I was able to learn to be with my children in their emotion, and that I didn't have to default to anger. So when we are angry, it is worth us checking what is underneath that. Is there something else going on that we need to be aware of? So hungry and angry we have so far. So we are up to L. Anybody like to think what L might stand for? Very good. Have absolutely spot on. So we have lonely. Lonely. Now,
I give you the L. Thanks very much.
Now, interestingly, we tend to think of loneliness as being an issue as you get older. It's, you know, especially the pandemic, we were very worried about the older people on their own being lonely. Interestingly, in a recent study, it was found to be a much more prevalent issue with those under 25. Much higher. So even in this world of connectedness, of technology, of those who live together, actually loneliness is a real issue for our young people. What a challenge. Do you know whether you yourself need people, or do you need alone time to recharge your batteries? So this isn't how sociable or chatty you are. This is when you are tired, are you best
being with people, does that raise your energy? Or are you best being alone? Does that give you what you need? Just talk about yourselves. Do you need people or do you need alone time? Okay. So let's just have a little show of hands. Are you somebody who needs to be alone? To have some alone time to top your batteries up? How many of those have we got? Interesting. And how many would say that they definitely need other people? And how many are on the fence and don't really know? Yeah, some people, yeah, absolutely. And actually we can change in different scenarios and as we get older. So I guess the thing is that did you notice that Elijah, as he got himself in more and more of a pickle, he actually sent his servant away? So he had this ally, he had this friend, this source of support, and he sent them away. So often we can, when we are getting into difficulties with our mental and emotional well-being, we can make decisions that are not good for ourselves. And we need to check in with those decisions. I'm guessing that actually for a lot of us, who've just lived through the pandemic, we will never take kind of social gatherings for granted again. We are finding a new kind of preciousness about being with others, aren't we? Even those of us who need alone time are valuing those opportunities to be with one another. But did you know that actually we all need, even if we're introverts, we all need social contact with other people through our day? And actually it has been shown that even a conversation with a stranger in the street or in the supermarket, those just chance encounters where you have a little conversation, they can have an amazing lift on our emotional and mental well-being. So we have to battle against the messages that the world gives us, that we have stranger danger, have to keep to ourselves, don't make eye contact. No, we need contact with one another. That's how we've been made. And so our last letter, our T, what might that stand for? What do we think that might stand for?
Terror?
Good one.
Tired.
Yes. Have you got flat batteries? Are you tired? Now, thank you, Louise. We can see that Elijah's overwhelming need is for sleep. And God meets him in that. And in fact, he meets him in that twice over. He sleeps and then he eats and rests and then he sleeps some more. Sleep is vital. It's critical. And when we feel tired, life's problems can feel so much harder to overcome, can't they? And yet there is a prevailing lie in our society, I believe, that, well, rest is for wimps and, you know, real people just power on through. You know, the myth of Margaret Thatcher and her 4 hours of sleep a day, you know, was part of that kind of narrative, wasn't it? John Mark Comer, the American pastor, wrote a brilliant book called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. I expect some of you will have read it. It's a bit of a buzz book at the moment. And he says this. He says, love, joy, and peace are at the heart of all Jesus is trying to grow in the soil of your life. And all three are incompatible with hurry. I agree, but I might just change it or offer a different translation if you like. Love, joy, and peace are at the heart of all Jesus is trying to grow in the soil of your life. And all three are so much harder when you're flipping knackered. tiredness is a killer. And actually, we can take proactive and practical steps to guard our sleep. You know yourself. You know how you can make that. Give yourself better odds for a good night's sleep. There's a horrible term, which is sleep hygiene, which I find. But actually, there's some really good stuff out there about how you can restructure your kind of routines to make sleep a much better opportunity for rest. And I know that for young people, this is one of a really big issue. And we need to do everything we can to support our young people to make the right decisions, even when they're a little bit counterintuitive to the lifestyle that a lot of young people lead. So, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. We can use these four categories as a sort of emergency MOT for our inner life. When the outside sort of emotions or the actions that we're doing, our behavior feels a bit of out of control, when we're not feeling ourselves, we can check in to see if one of these four things is playing its part. It's not the be all and end all, but it's a good place to start. And when we get good at noticing what is really going on the inside, well, I think we get better at noticing how God is providing for us, just as God's angel provided for Elijah. And then we can lean into God. We can learn to trust him more, and we're in a better place to be angels for other people. Because so often we get to play the part of the angel for others when they are in Elijah's situation. So we need to look after ourselves so we're in a position to do that. But let's just recognize before we finish that for Elijah, this is a very odd situation. Because Elijah should have been at the top of the world. At this part, just before the reading that Tristan read for us, Elijah has beaten the odds. He has had a massive victory. He has beaten the corrupt leaders of the day, and he has vanquished the priests of Baal. He is the rock star of the moment. And yet, when a threat comes, so Queen Jezebel says, I'm coming for you. And yet this is a message she has given him consistently all the way along. This is nothing new. And yet now, when he's just done all this amazing stuff, suddenly the arrow pierces his heart. He's terrified and he runs. So for some of us, although the world might see us as a success, although everybody else might be looking at us and going, well done, you're doing so well. Isn't life amazing for you? You must be really happy. For some of us, there's a gap between what the world sees and what's happening inside. And that can be a very lonely place to be. And it's at that moment we need to remember that God sees us, knows us, and loves us inside and out. And he knows the real us. Not the one the world sees, not the one that we show so merrily to the outside world. He knows the real heart of us. And he loved us just as we are, enough to die for us. He didn't need us to change. He didn't need us to put a smile on our faces. He didn't need us to power on through. He loves us. Full stop. We need to take our cue from God and learn to love ourselves inside and out. To learn to notice what's happening inside and out. And that means prioritising our own mental health so that we can be the people God made us to be, and so we can be angels for others when they are in desperate need. Amen.
Right.